Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be interviewing Dr. Jane Symington, and she is the owner of Taking Flight International Corporation, and her book, Setting the Captive Free, has given her an award, The Woman of Vision, by Global Television. I want to welcome you to the airwaves. Do you mind if I call you Jane?
Please call me Jane.
Wonderful. Dr. Symington, you put this book together because you really have a passion for healing. You like to get involved with energy transfer healing, dream interpretation, art, guided imagery. You have a background in nursing and psychology. This book really has dealt with, or does deal with, I correct myself there, with trauma, recovery, moving beyond fear. For you as a professional and as a woman, what started you on this path?
Well, I have been a professional for quite a few years doing healing work, but the real start on the path happened when my own son, my 13-year-old son, was tragically killed. And I knew that there had to be other ways than talk therapy to help me. And so I began to really delve into all kinds of alternate methods of healing.
Now, you say that one of the biggest lessons that you have grown through is learning how to walk in trust. What is walking in trust?
Well, when tragedy happens, I think one of the first things that goes is your ability to trust anything. Trust in the way that you used to view the world, trust in the way that other people will respond and will help you. For me, it was even trusting. I used to believe that if I sent my children to school, they would come home safely. That's all related to trust. And so all of that was so drastically taken from me when my son was killed, that I lost trust in God, in the way that things should be, in all my belief systems. I really had to work my way back through all of that. And when I began to really realize that I really didn't have any control over any of these things, it was when I really began to start to doing meditation, and I would sit with that, and I would just ask, what is it that I need to know today? And I began to basically walk in that whole truth that even though tragedy happens, somehow there is a positive outcome, somehow I will be able to move through the next day, somehow I will be able to heal from this, somehow I will be able to continue to relate to my husband and my daughters, and somehow I will be able to take myself back into the world to make a real difference for people. So basically, walking in trust for me means knowing that I live and walk in a parallel reality, that the spiritual world or that help is always there, and I just need to know how to tap into it. And when I was so broken and lost trust, I lost the ability to do that, or I never really had it before that, I guess would be a better way of saying that.
It's my observation that many times we find life presenting us with circumstances that's like you. You went through a phenomenal trauma with your son's death. It's almost as if something outside of ourselves says, wake up. You have been sleeping. Wake up. Now, the people of Bali helped you to wake up in a very special way. What makes these people so very special to you?
Well, first of all, I'd really like to comment on your wake-up message. That was so real for me. I really did experience that I had been asleep, and this cosmic shove And this working through the grief and then through the healing was really a huge wake-up call. And I began to see the world in such a different way. And so the question around the people in Bali, I was studying there. I was actually, part of my doctoral work is looking at the spiritual beliefs of people, and I like to study that in a lived experience. So when I was in Bali, I received the news that my mother had an inoperable brain tumor. And I had been witnessing the goddesses, the priestesses actually, out every morning blessing their incense and offering it. And so I was used to being up early in the morning and seeing all of that. But this particular morning when the phone rang to tell me that my mother had an inoperable tumor, I journeyed out to the ocean with the intention of sending healing energy in hopes that it would cure the tumor in my mother. But I saw this wonderful large white bird as if it were coming out of the sunrise lifting, and in a second another bird came following right behind it. And I knew that I was being given a teaching there that it was my need not to be orphaned that was my desire to send this energy to keep my mother in this dimension. But when I actually witnessed that and witnessed the priestess with their incense, I had this incredible message that that bird was my father in a bird image, symbolically perhaps, but strong enough for me to get the message that this was coming to represent my father leading my mother on her journey homeward. And so instead of sending energy to help her in her healing, I knew that I needed to say a prayer that anything that was unfinished with us could be finished so that she could take the next step on her journey homeward. And that was certainly something that I had learned from the Balinese people in watching their incredible celebrations of life and death, and how they, in their death rituals, they clearly burn, like they burn the body for starters, but they burn all of the energy that may be attached to that. And so I knew that I had to also free myself from any bonds that were connecting me to helping my mother or holding my mother back from the next journey that she needed to take to transition to the other side.
The Balinese people have a phenomenal culture. And obviously it has had a tremendous impact on you. And you have gone in one of your chapters, you talk about how to be free to move beyond fear. And I really liked one of your comments in your book where you said, every cell in our bodies holds memory. And that is so true. I know that for a fact. What made you aware of cellular memory?
Well, I guess probably, I could probably answer that in several ways, but probably the real awareness came because of my practice as an energy practitioner. So sometimes when I would and still do, even though I don't do a lot of that anymore, I would place my hands over a particular part of the body of the person that I was working with, and I would feel this lump of jump into my hands, which was an energy release. And so I knew that I was taking something out of that body that had been stored there. Other times as I was doing that, as I was past my work over my hands over the body doing energy work, I would have a very clear image of someone, of this particular person, doing something. And sometimes those images would even be of this person in another incarnation. So I became very aware that our bodies not only carry cellular memory from this incarnation, but they also carry cellular memory from other incarnations. Then after I began to really study neurology, because I really was very interested in doing a lot more in-depth work with trauma, I now know that cellular memory is very real neurologically. Every single cell in our body has the tail of an axon or a nerve cell to it. So what's going on in the brain and in the neurotransmitters, if we have a lot of stuff going on around us, that is not just happening in our brain or nervous system. That's happening and is communicated to every muscle cell in the body. So cellular memory for me is a very, very important piece of the work that I do, and it's very real.
I concur, and I think as science is beginning to catch up, and it's a slow process, but it's happening. Many professionals are acknowledging this and the mind-body connection that has been spoken of. In many instances, in sort of a lighthearted way, they're recognizing that everything within the body connects, period. Every single aspect, the brain, the cells, all work together. It's a highly sophisticated system. You also address something about belief systems, and I'm going to quote directly from your book. You said, people hold different perceptions of natural and supernatural events, and their perceptions are colored by their upbringing, including cultural influences. And that, I know, is a fact, too, because when you work with people from around the world, when you have an opportunity, which you have done, as I have done, you realize how significant that is. And if you're wise, you want to work with that. Now, in your international travels and your interactions with people from different cultures, what is one of the most significant factors about the cultural perceptions that you were able to incorporate in your work with them?
Well, I think the very first thing that I always try to do is get a sense of the belief system. And that belief system is really colored by, as we say, the cultural perception. So I really try to get a sense, just because somebody says to me, for instance, that they may be Christian, that may mean a million things. But so what is the particular cultural lens, if you like, that they look at this reality through, because it's going to be really clouded by that, or colored would be a better word, by that. So I think the best way to describe that might be just a little scenario that I write about in that, in Setting the Captive Free. I was doing some teaching for a group of people from a very different culture than I work with, than I belong to. And I was preparing these counselors to work with their people in trauma. And we were in a beautiful setting. The room was circular. The windows were all taking in the outside world, giving an impression that we were really one with nature and one with the world, which was very part much of their belief system as well. And then a particular bird hit the window, and the people in the class, most of them, all of them who were from that particular culture, it was like they dissociated. It's like they froze in time. And I needed to pull back, recognizing that if this had affected so many in this group, there was something attached to the belief system here that I didn't know anything about. And so as I worked through that gently, beginning to talk about beliefs and beginning to help myself understand what they were experiencing, because I knew that I couldn't work further with them, they told me that this particular bird was for them a symbol of death. And that meant, by it dying and killing itself against the window, that someone in this group was going to receive a message of death. Mm-hmm. And so we worked through that in several different ways. And what did that mean to them? And how could they use that particular belief? Because they were reacting to that, as we all do, exactly like they had seen all of the people that were powerful others in their eyes, like their parents, their teachers, perhaps all of the elders from that culture, how they had reacted in a previous time when they had seen that particular bird kill itself. So we talked about, which was in many ways a very fear-based belief, And so we talked about how could they use that belief and still work through that fear and look at some other possible ways of keeping that belief about birds being messengers from the spirit world, which was the basic belief. And then was that bird really predicting death, or was it predicting that maybe something else needed to die? And I was working there, as I always do, with my knowledge of symbol and of the dream. And so sometimes death actually means that something needs to die in order that something else can be reborn. And so that is basically how I worked through that. But the knowledge and the need to really understand, and you can't always understand because there are so many cultural perceptions, but to immediately recognize when you're working across culture that there is something going on here that is not part of what I know, and I need to pay attention to that.
In our world today, so many things are changing.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello? Hello, can you hear me? Jane?
Hello?
Jane, can you hear me? I think somehow or another there has, I don't know why, there's been an interference or a disconnect. But Jane, are you still there? All right, maybe Don's going to pick it up. But something happened to our transmission there. She wasn't able to hear us. So I think Dawn is trying to call her back, whatever happened. Every once in a while when you have this with phones, this it's fascinating. Dr. Jane Symington, hello.
I'm trying to get her back.
Oh, thank you. My engineer, Dawn, is trying to get her back. Well, you don't know what happened to the connection there, but we'll be connecting again with Dr. Jane Symington. Setting the Captive Free is her book. She has such a wonderful way of presenting information regarding what we need to do to be aware of the timing for changing paradigms. And when we get her back on the line, I want to talk to her about something that has been coming up in research. And again, for those of you who have been listening to the interview, Dr. Jane Symington is my guest. She is in Canada. The title of her book is Setting the Captive Free. And her website is takingflightinternational.com, takingflightinternational.com. There is so much about life that many times we have a hard time expanding into. My husband encountered a couple just the day before yesterday. And they were in a place where they were all sharing ice cream and having just conversation. And suddenly he found that in the conversation, these people started, well, how do I say it? Shall I say lecturing? They were trying to impress upon him a particular belief system. They were challenging him, trying to bring him over into their particular thought process. And he very quietly said to them, it's okay, you have your particular belief system, and that's fine. And I have mine. I do not choose to have yours. I was in that space at one time, but I am where I am right now. And you have the freedom to believe as you do, and I also have the freedom to believe as I choose. And when he expressed this in his manner to these people, they were very unhappy because they wanted him to go according to his process. Now, I don't know if that's ever happened to you, but I think that in today's world, especially with the news of the moment that has been out there, the atrocious activity that has gone on overseas with bombing, and when you have these things occur, and people stand up and say, this is my way. We're going to show you by force what is going to be done. I think to myself, oh, thank you. Dr. Wonderful. Jane, but I'll finish what I was going to say. Too many times people think that by force they can create a change. It doesn't work very well. Dr. Symington, I'm so glad we got you back.
Yes, I'm sorry. I have no idea what we have a very bad storm going on. It's an electrical storm, so I'm not sure if that's interfering.
Yes, that could that can easily influence things. So I'm sorry that occurred. But let me address something. I was just sharing with my audience. You know, we've just had this tragic news about the bombings overseas, innocent people being bombed. And in your book, and I'm going to relate it to something that you've stated in your book, it's changing paradigms of thinking. And there are so many different groups and attitudes. People don't even think. They really don't think about what they're doing and the results, the impact that it's going to have overall. And so often people get up into these paradigms where there's what I call a blindness. They don't look to examine. And that's something shifting into a broader paradigm of understanding, a paradigm that sees that an action put out is going to bring a result. And are you really going to be prepared for that result? How will it affect you in the bigger picture, an entire population? What can be the overall result? When I look at the things that are going on in the news today, it is so sad, and yet there is this blindness. What do you feel can be utilized as a tool to remove some of that blindness, to look at things that really don't apply anymore? We're not fighting wars on camels, and I mean, it's just such a waste of time and energy, and it's so destructive. What's your perception on this?
Well, I certainly agree that we really need to take a different perspective of it. And the first thing in changing anything is awareness. And so that's why so many of us, yourself included, who are working to shift that paradigm, shift that worldview, that we need to really take another look at the fact that we are all so very, very connected. So the energy that I sent out from me, will sooner or later actually, first of all, come back to impact me. But secondly, it doesn't just stop at the incident you're talking about, the bombing. That goes on like energetically to affect our entire universe, and I really believe the entire cosmos. And I became so aware of that as I began to study more holistic methods of healing. I really knew that I needed to get on with my own healing over the death of my son, because I became so aware that my grief and my sorrow was actually energetically impacting what I call the greater all. And so that at some level, I was really influencing so many people, and I would rather influence them for joy and happiness than for sorrow and suffering. And really, you know, when we think about that, when we think about that whole concept of the collective, Carl Jung called it the collective unconscious. I call it the collective consciousness. I don't think it's unconscious at all, because every thought we think, every action we do, moves up into this, if you like, this great collective soup. And he talked, and many talk about the critical mass theory. And if enough of us begin to think peace, joy, harmony, we will actually be changing that critical mass. But right now, so many are thinking war and violence, and so they are increasing that into that whole collective consciousness, and the critical mass is reached, and so then behaviors just begin to change that way. Now, that gives each of us a great responsibility, because every thought we think moves into, is energy, and moves into the collective consciousness, but also every act of violence. So every TV that we watch that's violent, that makes a huge impact into the collective stream. And so teaching people, I think, about this and making people self-responsible is so important. But the other thing I believe is we all, even our children, are born with their, on that, it's transcribed already on their DNA that there is a message being sent out here. And so what message do we want to transcribe onto our children's DNA? Certainly, we hope that we are, many of us are thinking peace, and that we are starting to transcribe that. The other thing, I'm a very hopeful person, and one thing that I know for sure is that the darkness is fighting very hard right now, mm-hmm. because when do we fight hardest? It's when we're losing. And I choose to believe that the light is winning.
Well, I think that there is so much of the old that is rising up, that is mm-hmm. having to be seen. Before, when it wasn't seen so clearly, it could cause a lot more damage. When things are hidden, it's just like an infection in the body. If it is allowed to fester, if it is allowed to continue to create its dysfunctioning pattern, you have infection. When you clean it up, clean it out, you may have to do that more than once. When it's able to get the dirt removed from it, it has a chance to heal. There could be a scar, that's memory, that's okay. But without clearing out the debris, without clearing out the dirt, without things being brought out into the open, the infection can end up killing its host. It doesn't have to, though. It's mindfulness, it's being aware, it's paying attention, and it's doing what needs to be done and being alert, being awake. We'll go back to that word we started off with at the beginning of our talk. Something you do in your work, which I just think is absolutely marvelous, and that is that you utilize art and you utilize music. I think this is invaluable. When in your book you're going through various levels of knowledge and experience that you have, you feel that this enables people to heal. And I agree. When you've done this, what is the most significant story you've ever had relative to how art and music have transformed a person?
Well, I have so many stories. I think probably the one that I think I would like to talk about and we would like to share today is the art activity that I do around cutting cords. And so in this activity, the first I do is describe the energy centers or the chakras and talk about how when we've been in a relationship that's been difficult. So I do this a lot when I'm working with women who are trying to move out of a domestic violence situation. So I will describe that these energy cords can get attached from that abuser to us and us back to them. So they're constantly draining energy back and forth, our precious energies, and we can't seem to move forward within life, and we need to cut those energies. And so what I have people do is actually take a large piece of construction paper and from another piece of construction paper cut out an image of that would represent themselves, and then take smaller pieces of construction paper and create smaller figures to represent any in their life that they think that they have cords attached with. And then I have all kinds of variety of strings, some being wool, some being twine, some being actually as thick as rope. And they glue that on their own energy centers. So, for instance, if they feel that they can't move on and find new love, and every time they try to find new love, this person's name or image just comes directly into their mind, then they will attach that string or that cord from their heart center to the heart center of the other person. And they do that. So if they've been sexually abused, they will probably have a cord attached from their sexual chakra or reproductive chakra to the energy center of that other person. And then we, when that is all done, and that's a process in art therapy that we call externalizing. So it's like they've kind of taken this out of themselves and they've now put it outside of themselves on paper. Then I take them on a very deep journey, and I take them really deep into trance, and they will go down, and they will find this person down standing by the water, and they get this person into the boat or persons, and that person begins to row until they can't see them anymore in the distance, and the cord is very, very thin, and I have them then image that they have this gold scissors, and in the presence of a spirit guide, sometimes that happens, they will cut the cord. And while they're still in trance, I have them move to the art piece in front of them and cut all of the cords. And so to see the people actually do that And you asked me for one example, and I'm giving you a group example here because I do a lot of work in group, but to watch their whole bodies actually jolt when they feel that cord being cut. And then I will say, if you actually, and here we go again about stored memory, I said, if you actually feel a physical pain on your body, I want you to massage that, and I want you to close that up with a clockwise circle. And many, many people actually feel that physical pain. But their life changes, and so we have people coming back, say, from that particular week's work, and then they will come back maybe the next week or the week after that, and they will talk about, okay, how was that for you, and how did that change your relationship? And I have many stories where people will say, you know, I'm almost even forgetting about him. I have a hard time even thinking about his name anymore, and that kind of thing. Or one good example, a woman who cut the cord with a daughter, she didn't want her out of her life, but she wanted her daughter to be much more independent. The daughter phoned her about an hour after she got home and said, Mom, were you doing some work with me today? I really felt that you were doing some work with me, and it's like I was having this dream about you. And that woman testified that relationship with her daughter was forever different. It was now like they were two strong, independent women supporting each other rather than so enmeshed. So that's one good example, and I write a lot about that in Setting the Captive Free.
Mm-hmm. One of your statements in your book, one of many, obviously, is placing intention shifts perception. Shifting perception allows miracles, as we define them in our lives, to happen. Shifting perception expands the senses. Expanded senses are the doorways that allow entry to the spiritual realities. Those are very, very good words, and there are so many wonderful things that you share in your book, and I feel that there's such a need, Jane, to be able to speak wisdom in today's vocabulary so that people understand that wisdom belongs to all people. It doesn't have any cultural application. It just is. Gender doesn't make any difference. It is something that, as human beings, we need to have this harmonic as a part of our lives, realizing personal responsibility is significant and that we need to be awake so we can make a difference. This is not
Absolutely.
Just for the rich and the powerful. It's for every human being on this planet. And that is the way that we are going to change a lot of the distortion that is there, but we have to awaken to who we are, to what really is the possibilities of life, but also the actual action to make the possibilities a living reality. And Dr. Jane Symington, it has been just a joy having you as a guest today. Your book is a powerful one, Setting the Captive Free. Your award by the Woman of Vision by Global Television, I think, is wonderful. Your website is takingflightinternational.com, and the word international is spelled out. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
It's my honor. Thank you so much for having me.
This is Donna Sebo. Check out her website. The book is excellent, Setting the Captive Free. Jane A. Symington, PhD, last name is spelled S-I-M, like Mary, I-N-G-T-O-N. Give it consideration. I think you'd be glad to add it to your library. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural, and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. The number to call into if you would like to let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, for those of you who are in the Pacific Northwest, of course, I am going to be having two upcoming appearances, and I want to give information about that. This next Tuesday, July the 26th, I'm going to be at the Progressive Spiritual Center, and that's at 6108 Mount Tacoma Drive Southwest in Lakewood. It's going to be starting at 6:30 in the evening. The topic is going to be mental ecology. There's a small fee of $10 at the door. I'm going to be speaking and doing mind demonstrations, but also teaching you how to do it as well. I'll have some books, some CDs, some handmade angels are going to be available. It's a fun, interactive program for anyone that wants to attend. And if you want to develop your intuitive skills, hey, come along. Now, also on July 30th, I'm going to be appearing at the Ascension Foundations program that's going to be held on July 30th at the Best Western Plus River's Edge. There's a meeting room there. This event, this full-day event, is being divided into two portions. The first portion is from 10 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon. I'm going to be there along with a number of other people. All kinds of services and products are going to be on display. The public is able to come in. There is no charge at all. In the evening, starting at 6 o'clock, there's going to be a special event, and this is going to be including Michael Shane, myself, and we are going to be presenters, and we are going to be giving an evening of a demonstration, not only of mediumship, but different aspects of mediumship, billets, apportation by Michael, and some other items as well. So there is a fee regarding this of $35 for that evening's event. Now, what I would say is if you want more information, go to my website, get all the publication information that is up on the website about the appearances, and then you can also look up the Ascension Foundation, and you could go to their phone number of 206-356-6356 if you want information there. So do keep that in mind, because it's a wonderful series of events. And then last but not least, the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. I have got 5 family passes left. That's all I've got left. If you or someone you know that would love to attend this, it's for 2 adults, 2 children. It's a $45 value. Get in touch with me, either by phone or by email. And I need your contact information so I can get the pass out, too, because the event is starting the first weekend in August. It's just around the corner. So I will be giving more information about the Renaissance event that's going to be coming up. But if you want a free pass, then get in touch with me. Phone number, 253-582-5604, 253-582-5604, or send me an email, donna@delphiinternational.com. Send me an email. Give me a call. 5 tickets left. Actually, there's only 4 left, because I've just got a call before the show, so I've only got 4 passes left. So do get in touch with me so we can make sure you and your family and friends will be able to go. Donna Sebo here, 888-815-9756. I was sent some information. Let me pull it out here. And this was on Carl Sandburg. Let me see. Where did I put that? I have all of this stuff. I have papers like you wouldn't believe on my desk whenever I'm doing a broadcast here. Oh, well, I'll find. Oh, here it is. Here it is. This is a quote. Carl Sandburg. He said, and I really like this, "I see America not in the setting sun of a black night of despair. I see America in the crimson light of a rising sun, fresh from the burning creative hand of God." Carl Sandburg. This was a man that really had quite an interesting life. He was the son of a Swedish immigrant, or Swedish immigrants, I should say, that worked on the railroad. He left school after the eighth grade, borrowed his father's railroad pass, and traveled as a hobo. Now, you can imagine people, when they think about that, they would have thought he was going to be a ne'er-do-well, never going to make himself into anything. However, he ended up volunteering for military service, was sent to Puerto Rico in the Spanish-American War, and attended college on the Veterans Bill. He's well known for children's fairy tales. They were called the Rutabaga Stories, and of his wanderings in American Songbag. In 1926, he wrote Abraham Lincoln, The Prairie Years, and in 1939, he wrote Abraham Lincoln, The War Years. He received a Pulitzer Prize for that publication, and in 1959, Carl Sandburg was invited to address Congress on Lincoln's birthday, and he wrote what he called his complete poems. He won another Pulitzer, 1951. This is what he wrote in one of them. He said, "All of my life, I've been trying to learn to read, to see and hear, and to write. At 65, I began my first novel. It could be, in the grace of God, I shall live to be 89. I might paraphrase, if God had let me live 5 years longer, I should have been a writer." Carl Sandburg, an American icon in the literary world, wanted to share that with you. Well, if you are experiencing various health situations that might be a challenge for you, I was amazed at finding out the value of coconut oil. Now, I'm sure you've heard of it. I've heard of it. I even have it. I don't use it very often because it's not in my habit patterning of using it. I use a lot of butter in my cooking and olive oil. So coconut oil is sort of on the back burner in my mind. But it has been something that for centuries has been very valuable to people. Coconut oil is made up of nearly 50% lauric acid. Now, why is this significant? Well, lauric acid strengthens your immunity and kills 99% of bacteria, viruses, and fungi on contact. They found that when it came to swine flu, it's a very good defense. It's very good for strep throat and respiratory infections. And this comes out of research from the University of Iceland. Now, this is what they said that you should do. 3 tablespoons of the oil daily provides enough lauric acid to help prevent illness. If you feel like you're coming down with something, 2 tablespoons of coconut oil 3 times a day can cut your recovery time by a whopping 57%. And it's great for the skin. It is something that people have been using for a fat item in the diet. It's great. But who would think that it would help with stomach problems? Goodness gracious, when you see all these ads on television for gastric reflux and all this other stuff, digestion is something that is so important, and we just think we ought to take a pill. Well, why not use coconut? This is something that they have found. It's great for indigestion or even diarrhea. Now, there's Joe Graydon. He wrote the book, The People's Pharmacy, and this is what he said. "I've had people swear that coconut has cured chronic problems like Crohn's disease and irritable bowel syndrome. Why? Coconut kills H. pylori, the bacteria behind stomach ulcers, on contact. Plus, it's one of the highest fiber plant foods there is. And fiber is the standard medical treatment for diarrhea." Well, how do you have to do? How do you do it? Just add it to your food. Shredded coconut on fresh fruit or on toast. Very good. Or I like this one. Have a couple of macaroons a day. That's one of my husband's favorite cookies. Macaroons. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. I have a wonderful summer poem that I've got in front of me by Norma Ronalds, and I like poetry. And I love the photo that's along with this beautiful poem. And it's a old-fashioned wooden wheelbarrow that's loaded with flowers in the backdrop. It looks like it was done in the Pacific Northwest. It's absolutely gorgeous. And this is what Norma wrote. Morning glories, mauve petals pressed against a trellis of white, gerberas and roses in a paint box of colors. Life holds so many treasures, and a summer. Summer, you're one of them. And I agree. We're ecstatic here in the Pacific Northwest. The sun finally came out today. I went in on an errand to my local bank, and everybody was just giddy because the sun was out. And for those of you that are in the hotter climes and you're saying, phew, I wish I were in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, when it's 64, 65 here, we think we have just got a heat wave. And so it's just been an absolute joy today. Everybody, like I said, is just giddy, like you wouldn't believe. Tea leaf reading. Have you ever done that? This is something that is an age-old art, yes. Now, no one really knows for sure when tea leaf reading was started. And for anyone that has been involved in the area of mind study, we know that you can tune into that intuitive process when you use a tool. And tea leaf reading is one that was developed a long time ago. The Chinese have been doing it for thousands of years, and they believe that the custom of tea leaf reading was introduced to Europeans by nomadic gypsies. They suspect around the 18th century. Of course, they're not really positive. But they have a quote by an English poet, Alexander Pope. In 1734, he wrote an essay on man, and he made the comment, "Matrons who toss the cup and see the grounds of fate in grounds of tea." So this is nothing new. It's alive and well even today. And even though it's unscientific, what they find is there is a good amount when someone is proficient in this. It's really great. Now, one of the places to travel to really get a very, very good tea leaf reading, according to certain individuals, is New Orleans. That's right. There was a place, I'm sure it's still there. It's probably opened up in a new location, the Bottom of the Cup Tea Room. It opened its doors in the city's French Quarter in 1929, and people come from all over the world to have their leaves read. And it seems like it would be complicated. I mean, it's, if you've never done it before, you will wonder, gee whiz, how do you do it? Well, I'll share with you my very first experience with a tea leaf reading was when I was in my late teens. And I was told about this Scottish woman who read the leaves. And I met this woman, and she was totally unlike anything I would have ever imagined. She had to have been 6'7" in height. And she had this wonderful Scottish brogue that was deep and rich. And she had a real compassion for people and for life. And I realized later she had a tendency to color what she read by her own particular belief system, but that's okay. She was a sweetie. She was really a sweetheart. And the ritual that she did, she served you a cup of tea, and then she wanted you to meditate on what was most important to you. And then she'd ask you to drink your tea down, leaving as little liquid in the bottom of the teacup as possible. And then what you were to do was to focus on a question and then swish your tea around, holding the bottom of the cup while you were focusing on your thought, your question. And then you were to turn it upside down on a saucer. And it was to stay there for a while so that the tea leaves would form their own pattern inside the cup. And then she would lift the cup up, and there was to be no water left in it, and then she would read the leaves. Well, you want to make sure, if you're going to do this, that the inside of your cup is plain, and that way you'll be able to see what is the pattern there. And this is something that was made in suggestions that, I don't know, you don't need to do this, but you might try it. It's fun. It's a great thing to try. When you have the cup of tea, you leave what, just a very, very tiny amount, like an eighth to a quarter of a teaspoon of the liquid and tea leaves together. And you turn your teacup 3 times in a counterclockwise direction using your left hand. And then you ask the person who has the cup to turn the cup over onto the saucer and to place his or her left hand on the upside down cup and turn it again 3 times in a counterclockwise direction. The teacup handle should end up facing you. And whatever you do, don't shake the cup and don't move the leaves. Just want to lift the cup up so that they will hold their pattern. And then, as instructions are given, look carefully at what you see. If you see any loose clumps of tea, well, just don't worry about it. You don't need to be specific. Sometimes you're going to find that your imagination is triggered, and that is what you do. You look at the leaf formations, and you give what you feel. Now, here is the standard idea about tea leaf reading. If the tea settles near the brim, something is going to happen in the near future, the tea leaves. If the leaves settle near the bottom, something's going to happen in the distant future. You can have points along the cup where you may determine there's a time frame. For example, a 90-degree point from the left of the handle signifies 3 months, and 180-degree point opposite of the handle signifies 6 months, 270-degree point signifies 9 months, and the 360-degree point just to the right side of the handle signifies 1 year. Now, to some people, the tea leaves up at the top foretell happy events. Those that settle near the bottom, perhaps sad ones. Well, that's just a little bit of information on tea leaf reading. This is Donna Sebo. We've got a dynamic lineup of people coming up next week, and we are out of time almost, but quickly I'll let you know that we're going to be talking with Laura Legere. It's not weird anymore. This woman's going to be sharing her experiences regarding the psychic journey. So she'll be my guest on Monday. I hope you can join us. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I'm so delighted we've been able to share this time together. I look forward to having your company again. Have a fabulous weekend. Live life with joy. Live life with the expectation of the best. And then go out and take out the action, or produce the action, to get the results you want. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.